mean, I always fall that God is entirely sovereign. You know, like he rules every single thing that happens on this earth. You almost have to lean on that with everything. Even the extreme, obviously, is actively killing other humans. But with whether or not, you know, I, you know, get distracted while I'm driving to work one day and get T-boned in an intersection, you know, like God has sovereignty on every single thing, the big and the small. And so that's where I fall entirely on that is I do what I can. And, you know, I still have ownership of my actions, but the things that I can't control, I kind of can't control.
Hi, I'm Nathan. Welcome back to Holy Hypocrites. This episode with Lieutenant Ian Jelta. This is an exciting one for me. Ian's a former student of mine. He's also a West Point grad. He is an attack helicopter pilot in training for the United States Army. We talked about a lot of things. We talked about the relationship of skill plus humility and integrity in leadership and how important each piece of that is to leading for the glory of God. We talked about being a light in a dark place and a dark workplace, especially in a leadership role in those places. We had a really difficult conversation about the God in war and what is the Christian's place in glorifying God as a war fighter. We asked about tracking progress. The Bible says train for godliness. How are we keeping track of that? How do we know if we're doing well, if we're on the right track? And finally, and if all else fails, don't miss the last 10 minutes. Ian brought some stuff to the table that I didn't even think to ask him, and he brought it, and it's awesome, and you're going to want to hear that. So even if you have to skip ahead, don't miss the last few minutes. I'm not going to ask you to do all of the housekeeping things. You've already heard that before. You've heard it from every podcast ever. I have one request. If you're subscribed and you find value from this episode, would you just share it with somebody? Would you just share the link either to the podcast, to the YouTube channel? That would mean a lot. I'd love to have these episodes land in front of the people who need them. So thank you for watching, for listening, for giving this some time. And now, Lieutenant Ian Jelta.
Hi, welcome to Holy Hypocrites. I'm Nathan. And thrilled to be here with one of my former students. He's a West Point grad. He's an Army officer. Very excited to have Lieutenant Ian Jelta joining us this afternoon. Ian, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here.
Let's start here where we start with everyone. How did you meet Jesus?
So I kind of had the easy path to Jesus, I think. Both my parents are Christians, grew up in a Christian household, a great Christian church. And so it's just kind of growing up around and surrounded by Christ. I came to know him at a pretty young age. And then I think there's a little gap there. I almost took that for granted of like, Jesus is just around. He's awesome. Everybody knows him. It's like, it's too easy. And then you get into like junior high and high school and you start to realize it's not really the case. So I kind of claim like got to know Jesus twice. Got to know him initially as like a child and then got to know him again kind of as an adult in high school as I learned more of like the kind of theology aspects of it and really got to dig into like who God is. So that's kind of like, I guess, more when than really how per se, but the how is kind of just little bits at a time being surrounded by, like I said, great people from family, friends, and mainly church as well. That was really big.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody else, a mutual friend, who said, I feel like people who grew up in church have a longer testimony because we feel the need to like explain the dips and the kind of ebbs and flows. Whereas somebody maybe who grew up in another situation just kind of says, I was doing bad. I met Jesus. I'm doing good now. we all end up where we are supposed to be. Give us a little bit of what you're up to. A military officer is a very, very broad title description. So tell us what you can about what you're up to, where God has put you and your family now.
Okay, so I have to start with, I only barely qualify as a military officer, I kind of think, given the fact that I've been mostly in the Army for 5.5 years and I'm still in school. I went to West Point, spent 4 years there, and then graduated, commissioned into the aviation branch of the Army. And so now I'm back at flight school in Fort Novosel, Alabama. Started through that, kind of started the process, got through the first phase, and then got into the Apache course, the H-64 attack helicopter course. and then had a baby. So I'm currently on hold again, and I'm waiting to pick that back up. So yeah, like I said, just kind of barely an officer in name and pay only. But
which is the most important two parts, right? That's why everybody joins the military at all.
100%. There's no better job than being a second lieutenant with no responsibility.
That's a good quote. I'm gonna yeah, you crap that. That's fantastic. So I'd asked you to think about a scripture or a passage that helps you, informs how you're supposed to do your job for God's glory. Where are we headed?
So we're heading to Psalm, actually.
Okay.
And there's a number of different ways I kind of thought or initially started going about this. There's obviously numerous references in the Bible to soldiers and soldiers for Christ and Roman soldiers. The centurion obviously came to mind. But the one that kind of really took my attention when I thought of it was actually David, because he is known as the man after God's own heart, but he's also very clearly a leader in the Bible. So that makes him a leader after God's own heart. And so I thought that was maybe something that I wanted to dig into a little bit. And in Psalm 78, if we start in verse 70, I thought this was something I could really relate to. He says, "He chose David, his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds. From following the nursing ewes, he brought him to shepherd Jacob, his people, Israel, his inheritance. With upright heart, he shepherded them and guided them with his skillful hand." And really that last verse, verse 72 there, is the one that really kind of reached out to me, is with upright heart. And then on top of that, with his skillful hand, there's sort of two different aspects to that.
Yeah. So how do you divide those up? What are those two big aspects you're seeing in there?
Yeah, so I guess to me, it kind of divides into the secular realm and the skillful hand, and that you need to be competent in your job if you want to actually be a good leader. But then it starts with the character aspect, with an upright heart, a man after God's own heart, as I just said, and all of like his pursuit for godly character. And obviously, as we know, David still stumbles along the way, but he's remembered as the man after God's own heart. And that was something that I think all of us should strive to be known as. And so that's kind of how I divided that, with the upright heart is the character aspect of it. And I think appropriately comes first, followed by the competence and the skillful hand. And you need both, but without character, the other one is basically useless.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible knowing where David's story goes, that that verse 70, that he chose his servant David.
Mm-hmm.
So now, where does that fit, do you think, in the broader gospel story? So we're talking about getting saved, training for godliness, working towards Christ-likeness, and eventually, obviously, joining Christ in heaven. Where does this process, both skill and character, fit in the gospel story?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. You said the training for godliness. That's like a lifelong journey. You're always training to be better. And that falls under both aspects of skill and character. Where you're not just going to pick something up and be good at it, as much as I wish that was the case. I've learned flying helicopters, you don't just jump in there and automatically be a great pilot. Bit of a learning curve there.
I can imagine.
And that's the case with everything. And so there's kind of like that hand where you constantly have to be chipping away. And I think I just kind of just jumped in me here, but like I initially think of that as a personal thing. Like I just need to be good at this, but there's also people around you all the time that are trying to get better at things or stuff like that. And maybe that's where the character ties in as well, as you should be trying to help those people as well. And that's a great opportunity to like give the gospel and preach the gospel to other people around you, or at least set an example for them in, I'm trying to pursue excellence in this one field, but not at the expense of other people, or even kind of like without reference to other people. There's always those people you should be helping as well. And that ties into here at flight school a lot, where we're always studying together and we're always trying to learn together. But at the end of the day, there is still a list of this person was the best and this person just barely scraped by, you know, but you can't let that get ahead of the important part of the character, helping others, and in that process, learning yourself as well.
Yeah. So what do you think the author of this psalm would say to a room of military, to a room of officers?
Oh boy. I think maybe what I would say is that if you look at how it ends, it doesn't end in worldly success. It doesn't end in being a general. This verse ends in upright heart and a skillful hand guiding the Lord's people. And I think that's really the crux of it. Being a general doesn't matter. Being, you know, the president or whatever, none of that really matters if you aren't of an upright heart and you aren't really shepherding the Lord's people. I also really like that term shepherd. I wrote a paper one time. One of the things I dialed in on was like shepherding and just like taking care of like growth around you as well. And that's something that just kind of jumps out to me as a key term, is he shepherded them. It's not as easy as just say like, hey, everybody do this and everybody just does that. You know, there's an active guiding of that. And that's something I think spoke to me as well, is the fact that it says he took David from nursing ewes. He was just a small farmer, like a shepherd. And I think that sometimes that small stuff is where you learn the big stuff, if you will. Like that's where you learn taking care of little things, even something that kind of can take care of itself, like sheep, or like I grew up on a farm, cows can mostly take care of themselves, but they can't always take care of themselves. So knowing and kind of how to balance guiding and also allowing them to take care of themselves as well, knowing that they kind of know what's best for them as well sometimes.
So it's interesting, you sort of hinted at what was going to be my follow-up question, because you are, when you finish your training, going to be both a pilot and a leader. You're still going to be leading soldiers in one context or another. How do you think these verses, the relationship between skill and integrity, informs or should inform how you do both your specific job and also how you lead and influence other soldiers?
I think that's kind of like, it's just like a balance sort of you, especially from the leadership aspect, we're expected to be competent. You know, that's an aspect of all leadership, is competence. But our main job is almost not so much doing the task as managing those that do the task. And so balancing, wanting to be really hands-on and like, I want to do it myself, to understanding the strengths and weaknesses of the people around you and sort of leveraging that to create something that's more than just the sum of its parts. You might have 10 people that are all good at their thing, and if you do it, you put them together well, it's worth 50 people. If you put them together poorly, it might not even be worth 5. And so I think that's kind of the balancing act, sort of knowing, having the integrity to say, like, this is what's going to be best for the whole and not necessarily what would look best for me or what would look best for my buddy here, the guy that, you know, has helped me out here and there. It's like knowing the general, like, collective good as opposed to individual good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So then on that note, what separates a good officer from a great officer?
I've been thinking about this one since you kind of floated that. I don't know if I'm in the position to really put my finger on the difference.
Okay, so let me paint that in a picture then. You talked a lot about, we got to talk a lot during your years at West Point, and you interacted with some very impactful specific officers, and you got to see a little bit of greatness. I remember you talking once at dinner about just being that close to someone who had done some of the things that you were learning about. What in your mind makes somebody that you would look at that way? What makes somebody great to the point that you would aspire to be there?
I think what really, and maybe this isn't necessarily the exact thing, but sort of the symptom, if you will, is I noticed like humility a lot in those people. And it seemed like every story you heard of these people that you just put up on like a Mount Rushmore of leaders was always like, I messed up. Like I made this mistake. And then all these people around me or people in the past that helped me like get me to this point are really who crafted me into overcoming this mistake and taking the action that all the rest of us just see as like an awesome example of leadership or integrity. But like I said, it seems like a lot of those stories, or at least the ones that really resonated with me, started with a very humble like, I actually could have been better, or I only got to this point because of the people around me. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that might not exactly be the difference, if you will, but I think it's, like I said, a symptom of the difference, is that kind of selflessness, the humility, being willing to take yourself out of it and see the whole picture for what it is.
Well, and so many, the temptation for officers is even, I would think even more so, because kind of your name gets put on the paperwork, but all of that is a result of however many enlisted people doing the grunt work, for what it's worth.
Yeah. As a history major, I can say I read a lot of generals and stuff like that, and not a lot of like staff sergeants and sergeant majors making history, but really we know that below every one of those names was probably 1,000 other names that chipped away at it in their own little way. And mm-hmm. for as much credit goes to that one person, it could be spread out among all of those people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So if some humility and integrity sets apart, in at least to you and your experience, sets apart good from great, what sets apart good or even great officers from those that add Christianity, that add faith to it?
So I think like the right answer there should be nothing, you know, like they should be one and the same.
Okay.
But obviously that's not always the case. I think sometimes I've seen officers almost try to be prideful in the wrong direction of like, they take so much pride in being a Christian that they set aside sort of like the skillful hand aspect of the passage we just read, where they they almost feel like because we go down this path, that'll overcome any other shortcomings I might have.
Mm.
And I don't know. I've met some fantastic Christian officers. Well, so I don't want to say that like it's every single one of them, but I've maybe noticed that a little bit, where it's almost like an excuse and not something that you should say with, like an add-on. Mm. And instead, like I said, some people use it in place of something else. But I don't know if that really answers your question, I guess. But
a couple other people that I've interviewed so far have talked about the difference between showing their faith and sharing their faith. And so like one of the guys I talked to, a cop, who said he notices, because he can't always share, usually can't share, but he's in a position where if people find out he's a Christian later, they don't want the person to be surprised, where they would go, oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And they might even be curious about Jesus because of it. So what kinds of things could an officer do that would make people curious if they found out later, oh, that guy's a Christian? Oh, okay.
That's just kind of two ways I could go with this. Like dedication, I think, is one that jumps to mind, in that the people, it's almost like priorities. Obviously, you kind of have to balance different things, but the people that really jump out to me prioritize things beyond the military while still being good soldiers, if that makes sense. And it's not like it's keeping the main thing sort of. And I guess I don't know if there's a list of specific things that they do, but it's kind of like when they're in one spot, they're in that place. So like at school, you'd have an instructor that when they were teaching a class, they were the instructor, you know, they knew everything they needed to know about that class and they were good at that. But then when they went to, I was a part of OCF there, when they'd go to an OCF meeting, they weren't that instructor anymore. They were like a Christian mentor for the most part. This is kind of where they all fell. And they were that person. And you could come to them, talk about them, they'd be really knowledgeable in that. And then some of them would be like TAC officers, or the people we'd talk to about military growth and like growing as a leader or as a soldier, and they would be like that expert. And so I think prioritizing, like kind of knowing where you need to be an expert, and then prioritizing those things correctly. And I guess that would kind of be like what set those people apart for me.
And genuine is an important piece of that too, that they're not putting on a show. First Corinthians, I always think of First Corinthians 10. Whatever you do, whether you eat or drink, do it all to the glory of God. How can you fly helicopters to the glory of God?
So that's one I've thought about a lot since you kind of asked me to do this. And I think it's hard. I know I said this when you asked me. I was like, I don't know if I'm necessarily the best person to talk about this because I don't feel like I do it all the time. But the one thing I kind of leaned on in talking to my wife, like talking to some friends I had, was I think, you know, God kind of gave me a gift of peace and patience and just being calm in the storm, sort of. And when you're really sucking at flying a helicopter, it feels a lot closer to a storm than you might guess. And so I think just being calm and know, like having that peace from like the spiritual peace of like, even if I really suck today, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, you know, like A, there's always tomorrow and God hasn't got me this far just to leave me stranded here. But also like, even if I completely fail out of everything here and just go back to living on a farm, like it's still okay as long as I'm, you know, like living for Christ, as long as I'm a Christian. And I think kind of having that perspective helps. And like I said, I lean on the fact that I think God has given me that kind of peace as a gift and as a strength. So I think maybe kind of what I would be getting at broad term would be leaning on like the strengths that God gives people. I think that's how you live for Christ in a day-to-day basis, is you find like, this is what he blessed me with. This is what I can kind of give to other people, and leaning on that and leaning into that. And like an example of that was my stick buddy that I had that we did all the class together. We flew together all the time. She was the poor soul stuck in the back of the helicopter when I was learning how to fly it. She was kind of a stress ball. You know, she was just very stressful about a lot of things. And I think God paired us together on purpose. You know, it wasn't an accident that I'm a very like calm and if it happens, it happens and we'll just figure it out person. And she was much more stressful. Like, we need to be planning this and doing that. Cause I also kind of fall on the wrong end of that spectrum. I don't always plan the best. It's kind of like, it'll happen, you know? And so I think that'd be my like example of how you can do little things for Christ as you lean into the strengths that he gave you with the knowledge that he doesn't put you in some place and just leave you completely stranded. You know, he's prepared you for that place and it might be uncomfortable, but he's gotten you that far for a purpose.
So you brought up two words that you've said multiple times already is humility and integrity. What does that look like lived out? Like real life application, what does that look like?
So I think in the community that I'm starting to find myself in flying the Apache, like pride is a huge issue. Like I'll say it's an issue because it is. And coming from like getting into West Point, there's a lot of people that are prideful of that. Graduating West Point, there's a lot of people that are prideful of that. This might come as a shock to you, but pilots, a lot of times, very prideful.
No way.
And then, you get in the attack community and it's like, I mean, like a lot of people think they're the best of the best simply because we fly guns, you know? And so I think the humility aspect comes to play there in like owning your mistakes and realizing that like, as much as we want to be the best of the best and absolutely like leaning forward, literally just attack all the time. Like people will literally just say attack out of nowhere. It's kind of take you off guard right away. really just being the aggressor, you kind of want to brush mistakes to the side and maybe just say that was a fluke. I don't want to learn from that. I think owning your mistakes is a good way of like kind of creating that humility. And it also creates integrity. If like everybody knows, hey, that guy, if he messes up, like he's just going to come out and say like, I really goofed up there. And, make things right immediately. It's not a, we have to coax it out of him, or we just know that this guy like might get you killed because he's too prideful to learn from his own mistakes. And so I think kind of owning your mistakes and being open about that really helps grow in both integrity and humility in, especially like in, like I said, the community I'm starting to find myself in.
Yeah. And in that more aggressive end of the community, how does one go about being a light in the darkness there, especially surrounded in many of those communities there's a heavy aspect of drinking, of conversational issues that are hard to be consistently a part of. And obviously every group is different, but how could you be a light in those situations?
I kind of have to lean back on C.S. Lewis here a little bit. And in Mere Christianity, he talks about like the human machine, you know, and how if you live a godly life, like that essentially becomes what's best for you. I don't want to give like a prosperity gospel kind of thing here, but if you live a godly life, God knows what's best for you and he will take care of you. And I think in that kind of situation, you see that a lot where people that are like drinking a lot know it's like damaging to self, but it kind of makes you feel good, you know. And if you are like cussing and swearing, you know, it just, like, helps burn some steam off, you like you see that a lot in the military. And I think setting like kind of withdrawing from that, like that action, not necessarily from that community, like you can still be with those people, but withholding yourself from sinful acts, it always opens up conversation of like, what do you mean you don't smoke? Or what do you mean you don't swear or drink? And it sort of gives the opportunity to present that human machine perspective, like from a godly perspective. And it's not just we run ourselves hard into the ground because we're all we have to live for and you get one life and that's it. And you see that a lot if within like a really hard run group of people that is the military. It's just burn yourself out, do whatever it takes to keep going. And then at the end, you're at the end, you know. I think giving that more godly perspective and a longer, eternal and more meaningful perspective helps with that. And like I said, just withholding from those sinful acts helps to like present those opportunities. And then if you just, even if you don't necessarily make it a scene, you just live that way, you're going to live differently and be different from other people because that's genuinely what's best for the machine that God created in us as people.
Where do you find balance in the way of you've got a young family, you've got obligations there? I know right now you're between classes, but when you pick up again, what does it look like or what are you learning about leading your family in the middle of leading others and training to lead others?
Yeah, I think here I kind of have to go back to the prioritizing and being home when you're home and being at work when you're at work, being the managing officer when that's what's needed and being the lead gun pilot when that's what's needed. Mm-hmm. And just being present wherever you are. And obviously that's a lot easier said than done. Especially like here in the school environment where they literally give you homework. They say, take all of this, go spend 6 hours at home doing all this stuff and come back ready to hit it tomorrow. And also you're not going to get enough sleep, but you can't take nap. You know, it's just everything. Just being able to work when you need to work, be now like a husband and a dad when I need to be a husband and a dad, and just knowing, kind of having the self-realization of like, this is what is needed of me at this moment. And I need to be here for that. And I think understanding a little bit as well, that like some things are going to slip here and there, but like God still takes care of you. He knows every little thing about you and what you're going through. And he's not going to let you get, as long as you lean on him, he's not going to let you get to the point of like burning out or making serious mistakes. Like I said, as long as you're leaning on him as well. Because I know a lot of times here I fall behind in reading my Bible and stuff like that. And you realize how much strength you actually draw from leaning on God and how much he really fills you with the Holy Spirit a lot of times.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, and it's to phrase this correctly. Feel free to say what you think, and then we can always cut it.
Okay.
Because it's something from what you said that I know people would be curious about, and I want to get your opinion, but I don't want you to be uncomfortable with it.
Okay.
Because you talked about being not only in the military, but an officer, not only an officer, but a pilot, not only a pilot, but in this attack corner of pilots. What would you say about, now I'm going to take the far end of this, okay? This don't hear what I'm not saying. Jesus said, go in the world and make disciples, and you are someday going to go into the world and make corpses. What is the God in that?
So that was one that I figured was going to come up. I thought about looking at what everybody else kind of had to say about it, and I actually didn't. Part of me was hoping it wouldn't come up, I think. But I think what I lean on is that there's very clearly like good and evil in the world. And God has no tolerance for evil. He provides a way out of it. And that's, you know, that's the whole gospel, is that we are sinful. All of us are deserving of death, but he's provided a way out of that. Not physical death, but like, you know, eternal life. But the reason we need that is because he has no wiggle room for sin and evil, you know. And there's always needs to kind of be, this sounds really like, I don't know, like, ooh, I'm the guy that steps forward and, you know, shoots evil in the face. I don't want to sound like that. But there is always kind of like the need for that, or you're just going to be overrun by evil. And especially here in like a fallen world, evil, I don't want to say will win, it will win short term.
Yeah.
You know, like it is winning at the moment. That's just the fact of the matter. And so from my perspective and like reading the Bible too, if you look through the Old Testament, there's lots of examples of God coming in and destroying evil. And I like to think that if he can use all of the people of the Old Testament to destroy evil, and even if it's just temporarily make the world a better place, like he can use me for that as well. And obviously there's a whole rabbit hole there of like just war theory and like, what if we're, you know, doing that and then how do you know that the guy you shot is really the personification of evil?
Yeah.
And to which I don't know if I really have a strong answer for.
Well, and there's things that even as an officer will be out of your control,
mm-hmm.
but that's a powerful perspective. I think there's a context to it. Nothing, you and I have talked a lot about black and white. The not so few things in life are black and white. And yeah. So I appreciate the way you thought about that. Where does that land with trusting the sovereignty of God? Because I've talked to a couple others already who are in very, very difficult work contexts. And those discussions all in one way or another fall back on trusting that God knows and that God is in control, even if it feels like we are not. So where do you fall on the sovereignty of God in those situations?
I mean, I always fall that God is entirely sovereign. You know, like he rules every single thing that happens on this earth. You almost have to lean on that with everything. Even the extreme, obviously, is actively killing other humans. But with whether or not, you know, I, you know, get distracted while I'm driving to work one day and get T-boned in an intersection, you know, like God has sovereignty on every single thing, the big and the small. And so that's where I fall entirely on that, is I do what I can. And, you know, I still have ownership of my actions, but the things that I can't control, I kind of can't control. And I also think of it on sort of the reverse perspective of if I was, you know, say in a country where there's the big, great superpower, you know, killing people, from that perspective, almost without any like justification or almost without warrant, and, you know, like indiscriminately, almost as from that perspective, if you're still God's like people in that situation, God doesn't care for them any less than he cares for me. You know, I think of like Rahab in the Old Testament. You know, she was a believer and saved from destruction, you know? And so if you turn the tables on that as well, God still cares for his people in those situations as much as he cares for me shooting a hellfire from an Apache on the other end of it. And again, even if I were to be the one that got killed, I am still, as a human, deserving of death. You know, that's that's the whole first chunk of sin, is that I have sinned and deserve to die. And I put all my faith in Jesus and eternal life through him. And then from there, like I said, kind of leave it up to God. What happens is all in his control, and he works all things for his glory, not for mine, not for the United States of America's, for his glory.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So what are you currently working on? Where are you currently trying to grow in that for his glory vein? What areas of your life would you like to move more aggressively towards his glory?
So right now, the big one has been being a dad for his glory. I obviously wasn't super surprised by that. You get a couple of months to think about it, at least.
Yeah.
But it changes a lot when they're actually here, it turns out. And so I've thought a lot about that, and how do I be a good dad that's gone a lot? You know, like, I think of, like, my dad was around, I would say, all the time. You know, like, he lived with us. He obviously got work calls sometimes, but he was there, present, a good father figure all the time. And I might not have the benefit of being that for my son. And so, like, that's something I've thought about. And then even there, it's kind of like, if I was around all the time being the best father I could be, that's still going to fall short of the perfect father, you know? So that's kind of what I've been trying to grow, is sort of learning how to be a good father, but more so learning how to represent the perfect father in, you know, Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And so how do I live a life that points to him and not live a life of me just trying to, like, looking down, you know? And how do I live a life that represents looking up and sort of like bringing people with you, as opposed to, like, I think this is it, and, you know, a really down folks view. That's kind of the best way I can describe it, is looking up versus looking down.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you do that?
Oh boy. Here's where I'm not the person to be answering questions. I'm trying to read some books, and I think this one's probably the best one. I just can't tell it's a Bible, but that's a Bible. That's the best one to start with.
Yeah.
Just look, I guess maybe a more useful answer is thinking about all of the things that, like, my dad did for me that I thought were, like, critical in my life, and looking at, you know, other people I know. Like, I've got some good friends I can talk to about this kind of stuff, and, like, what their dads did for them that was pivotal in their life. And even some non-Christian friends that I see what their dads did for them that was pivotal, but maybe not in a godly direction. And sort of kind of getting both left and right boundaries, as opposed to just, like, this is what I'm striving for and not watching out for anything else, you know? So I guess that's probably the most useful answer for, like, what I've done, like, kind of how I'm trying to grow that, is thinking about what worked for me and what I've seen potentially not work for other people, and sort of hopefully crafting a bit of a game plan before he starts walking around and really causing trouble.
I want to go back a little bit to something, because it kind of has become an umbrella for a lot of the other things you've said. From the verse that we started with, but the relationship between skill and integrity, character, between your piloting and your leading and your parenting and husbanding and all the other things that you are actively juggling, how are you measuring, tracking progress? How do you know if you're doing well or not? Obviously, with flying, you'll get some measurements, you'll get some feedback. But in some of those other areas, how are you keeping track, or how are you keeping yourself accountable?
Yeah. So the flying one, yeah, that's the easy, because your IPs just give you a big old unsat if you had a bad day. So I'm not too worried about that one. I don't even know. I honestly hadn't really even considered, like, how do I keep track of growth of being, like, a good dad or being a good Christian. I just kind of try and keep chipping away, I guess.
Well, so many of those things I have taken to, and this is not the right answer, this is the probably the far extreme of trying to record as much of time as possible. And so much of that is how many of my days off did I actually spend with family, or how many days did I get home when you didn't have homework, that you, flip the TV on, shut down.
Yeah. I actually just wrote that down. How do you measure progress as a dad and a Christian and a husband? And like I said, a leader, it falls into that. Like I said, the piloting one, that's the easy one.
Yeah.
You get graded all the time in that. But
and there was a preacher, and I'm forgetting his name. If I find it, I'll text you the link. But there's a preacher who I heard speaking to David, your example of David, who said David had his counsel, and he had Jonathan, who loved his soul, and he had the commander of his army who fought his battles, and he had the prophet who spoke truth into his life. He said every man needs someone to love his soul, someone to lead to fight his battles, and someone to speak truth into his life. And I've definitely found some years of my life where one of those seats was empty.
Mm-hmm.
I was lagging in those areas.
Yeah. Heard him references the strategic corporal.
Uh-huh.
Call somebody else. Like, is that really the best idea here? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd like to ask if there's anything you would recommend for other Christian professionals that is helping you, again, do your job to the glory of God, lead your family to the glory of God, whether book, movie, podcast, TV show, sermon series, that we can pass on to anybody else that's listening.
I think maybe even more than a book or a movie or anything like that, what I've found specifically in like the military aspect of things is like a mentor, like a good Christian leader mentor. And I know the Army has some programs on like finding mentors and stuff like that, but I think finding somebody that you maybe relate to more or like can look up to that isn't Army selected for you. You know, it's like, this is somebody that I've really been drawn to, and developing sort of a mentorship relationship with them. And for me, it's been a couple of different people like throughout the couple of years now. Like, it hasn't even been that long, but even like when I thought about joining the military beforehand, like I talked to you about that stuff. And at school, there's a number of different people I could talk to. And like our OCF small group leaders are my buddy that lived with us here for nearly a year and a half. Like, his dad is a colonel, so he was somebody you could talk to, or even just if you don't talk to them, like watch them and like observe, like learn, kind of see the example they put forth and how they kind of manage all of those things. And so I realize that's kind of a cop out on your answer.
No, it's a good call.
Yeah, there's lots of books. You can just Google books that fall in this category and you'll probably find something good. But I really think like a mentor, somebody.
Well, in some ways, a book is a cop out to actually developing that kind of relationship. It's easier, which I don't know, you can disagree with me on this if you want. I'm better at taking advice from C.S. Lewis than I am from taking just somebody comes into my office and says, hey, I'm seeing this in your life. But when we actually more so need those people. So it's a good call. It's a really great recommendation. That doesn't make it easy. Do you have a recommendation for how to ask somebody to be your mentor?
So I'm a pretty just like straightforward person. So anytime I've kind of asked somebody to either mentor me or at least like kind of sit me down and give me a good, like shoot me straight moment, it's been pretty much just a straight up, like, hey, I've been kind of struggling with this. I've noticed you are strong in this. Can you help me?
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know if it's worked this far. I don't know. It might not be the best answer, but it's gotten me this far. So
that's a great way to look at it. I think a lot of things would be better off if we just went, well, you know, it's working so far, I'm going to stick to it.
Yeah. The only, like I said, I guess thinking about that, the only points I'd bring up are like, identify what you stink at and what they're good at and just point those out. Like, hey, I'm struggling with this.
Mm-hmm.
You're good at it. How? Help me. I think that'd be.
Do you get some of those interactions with your classmates? I assume that some people are more gifted in certain areas than others.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's like my stick buddy. Like, she's really gifted at like rote memorization, learning like those kind of things. And I guess I'm probably better at, or was probably better at, like the extrapolation, kind of like more obscure topic. I don't know if that's a really good way to describe it. But either way, then you obviously find people that are better at some things. Then that applies to faith as well. There's some people that are better at creating like relationships with people, which also my stick buddy, she is a social butterfly. I'm almost the exact opposite of that. And so like, she could make friends with anybody. And I'm a lot more like reserved in that category.
Yeah.
And so that's something I learned from her just in the, I don't even know how long we were in Common Core, like 8 months or whatever it was. Like how she just goes about making friends. And it turns out, much like asking a mentor, it's pretty straightforward. You just go and be friendly with people. It's crazy.
Go figure.
Yeah. But yeah. Cool. And applies to other things as well. Like there's some people better at understanding theology than others. Like I get swamped in that real fast. And my grandpa Ralph is one that loves that stuff. I'm sure you and him have talked about some of that. And so he's a good person. He's a good reference to have.
Well, is there anything else that comes to mind that I missed or that I didn't, you questions you were hoping I would ask that I didn't get to?
I wrote down a couple of notes as I was thinking about some
stuff.
Yeah,
what do you got?
Mostly just so if you asked a few questions, I wouldn't be entirely blindsided.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that kind of jumped out at me and the one thing I was thinking about as I was looking for the verse I wanted to kind of dive into for this was like the Great Commission and how, because I was thinking about the centurion and how he points out that he has authority and if he tells somebody to do something, it happens. So God can say, do something and that'll happen. But the reverse of that's also true of the centurion had people above him that would tell him to do something. It didn't matter what it was, he had to do it. And we're in that like same position where we have God above us. And he straight up told us the Great Commission of go. You know, and it almost is just that easy. Go. Just two letters. Just like start something, anything. And I'm terrible about, like, I definitely am falling short on this as well. I'm very... Like I'll very easily tell myself, just think about it a little bit longer, or like read one more book about it, you know. He doesn't say, you know, read a couple books about it, talk to somebody, maybe think about it for a couple days, kick the can down the road. It just is go,
yeah,
you know, go. And
now the only thing I'd nitpick you on there is I would sub out the word easy for simple.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that are simple, but not easy.
Yes, 100%.
I was doing a lot of research, getting this whole thing up and running about how to literally do every part of a podcast. And some of the people that come up that have a million followers that are like, oh, it's easy. You just do this, this, and this. Like, okay, that's simple.
Simple.
It's not necessarily easy.
Yep. Yeah, but, and... It's the same thing here. Like it is simple to just go, lean into the gifts that God has given you. I know it's floated around for probably a while now of like, he doesn't, He doesn't call the prepared. He prepares the called.
Yep.
It's that thing. Like he doesn't get you there and just leave you stranded.
Yeah.
So just go and like, he'll take care of you. And I think that was something I was a little convicted by when I was kind of thinking about and getting ready for this, was that I was thinking about and getting ready for everything and not actually just sitting down and doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's as much for anybody else as it is for just myself as well.
Well, and that's such an interesting, when you think about, I think it's 1 Timothy where Paul says, train yourself for godliness. And then he says, command and teach. So he's saying you should be leading, but mm-hmm. then right below that, he says, keep training.
Yeah,
and it's that whole thing of you never arrive. You and I never, I don't think, ever feel, okay, I'm ready. We just go. Again, that doesn't make it easy, but it does make it simple.
Yeah,
which is best. Simple. I've always found simple best.
Yep,
that's awesome. Anything else in mind?
I don't think so.
Well, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
Bye.